Blog Talk Radio.
What did I do wrong? What did I do? I just want someone to love me cause I love her.
Good evening and welcome to Animal Advocates Radio, Voices Cared for Animals, number 254 shows and counting. I want to welcome everyone aboard and a big thank you to Donna Hughes on her song, Dog on a 10-Foot Chain. She's been a guest several times here, songwriter and everything, and she's awesome out there, you know, fighting for the animals on dogs on chains. So there's a petition out there on change.org for that. I'm going to be posting it on my page soon and to get it going, because our animals out there, dogs on chains, deserve freedom, and they deserve to run around and be comfort, not tied to a tree, and just, you know, some of them out there, no food or water or bad weather conditions. So everyone, just please be a voice for the animals, continue to be, because we do have a lot of issues out there, and we, you know, all together as a team, we can go on this road together and we will reach this destination all in good time, but it takes teamwork. My name is Debbie Dahmer, and I am the producer and host for Animal Advocates Radio. And I want to welcome all you new listeners aboard and all you returning listeners. Thanks for all your support. And this show is coming live from the PPJ Gazette Online. That's Marty Oakley from TS Radio Network. We make a great team. I was a host on her show for 163 shows for Voices Cared for Animals. And 164 after that, I went on my own, and she helped me get it together. So a big, huge thank you to Marty Oakley. She's got a lot of hot topics on the PPJ Gazette Online and also on her radio shows, TS Radio Network. And if you want to find that, just go to blogtalkradio.com and search Marty Oakley or TS Radio Network. You can also find Voices Cared for Animals on there, all 254 shows. But I want to go ahead and go over a couple things. This show is recorded live every Thursday and archived on Blog Talk Radio. So if you ever miss any shows, or if you want to go back and listen, you can always listen and share 24/7. And that, just go to www.blogtalkradio.com/voices cared for animals. I will be taking calls later on in the show. And if you want to record this number, it's the same every Thursday. You can listen by internet or you can listen by phone. You can use Skype, area code 310-982-4270. So press 1 to let me know, because you'll be in a queue, that you want to come on air and try to, refrain from any noises in the background. TVs, radios, conversations, you're more than welcome to come on board. I got a guest coming on tonight. It's her first time. It's not Animal Wellness Action's first time, and they're always welcome to my show. Her name is Holly Gann. She's the Director of Federal Affairs for Animal Wellness Foundation and Animal Wellness Action, and she'll be joining us this evening. It's such an honor and a pleasure to have her on. She's out there, you know, working hard and relentless to get these issues, animal welfare issues, out there to, you know, help the animals in need for better lives and futures. And our topic we're going to start with will be Pet Facts Act HR 5715, and this is the Congress to Help Combat Puppy Mills. But you're live and on the air, Holly. How are you doing this evening? Welcome aboard. This is such an honor.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, I'm so glad to have you. You know, I've had Marty Irby on here and Joshua Marquise and from Animal Wellness Action, and you're always welcome to come back. You know, always, you all of you are doing such hard work, and what you're saying is helping animals helps us all, and that is so true. But go ahead, Holly. You want to go ahead and tell the audience out there how you got started and what's your, and we'll get into the, about the puppy mills, but go right ahead. You're live and on the air.
All right, absolutely. Well, you know, the way that I got started, so like you said, I am the Director of Federal Affairs for Animal Wellness Foundation and Animal Wellness Action, and kind of how I got into these issues is that, you know, animal welfare is something that I've always cared about ever since I was a small child growing up in Florida. Animals were always a part of my life, as they are for many people. But after college, I ended up starting a grassroots group focused on enforcement of animal cruelty laws in Florida, and that work inspired me to go to law school. I went to law school and specialized in animal law, and then after that, I had worked at the Humane Society of the United States, worked in the Horse Protection Department. I was the organization's expert on the issue of horse slaughter and putting an end to the slaughter of American horses. I also went into their Federal Affairs Department and continued lobbying on the horse slaughter issue, but also led the organization's effort to pass the Preventing Animal Cruelty and Torture Act, which is the first federal anti-cruelty bill, which actually became law last year. And I also led the organization's efforts to pass the Pet and Women Safety Act, which is a bill focused on domestic violence in pets that became law in December of 2018. And then after that, I ended up going over to animal wellness, and I have loved it. I very much love working on animal protection policy, and I spent a lot of time advocating on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., and it's something that I very much enjoy. And so tonight, what I was hoping to do was I definitely want to talk about the Pet Facts Act, which is a brand new bill focused on the puppy mill issue. And I'd also like to, you know, go through and perhaps, you know, give listeners a little bit of an update on some animal protection more issues more broadly. We have several animal protection bills in Congress right now. And, you know, I'd like everyone to be able to get familiar with the array of issues or build upon what they already know. And I'd like for people to learn more about what they can do to help get better laws for animals.
Well, that'd be great, you know, because the more awareness that we got, and I noticed on the website, and I've signed many of the petitions there, Holly, to take action, everybody on there, and you will get a response from your senator and your rep. It's awesome. Just go to animalwellnessaction.org and go under Take Action, and there's several issues for the animals' welfare, so please, you know, spread the word, because it's and it's like a letter form, so all you got to do is fill it out and send. That's it. And that's awesome, Holly. I wanted to bring that up because I got more to sign.
Absolutely.
We'll sign them all.
Yes. More to sign. That's what we need. www.animalwellnessaction.org. Go there. It's easy to take action. You can email your legislators. You can call your legislators. You know, that's ultimately what we need in order to build support for these bills to make them pass. We need everyone listening to call their legislators and ask them to co-sponsor these bills. And we lay it all out on our website. So everything that you need to know is right there. We try to make it as easy as possible as we can.
Yeah,
so
it's,
I think
it's
what I'll do.
Fast and simple. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, why don't I start with just kind of going into some updates on the various bills we have, and then we'll dive deep into the Pet Facts Act. Does that sound like a plan?
That sounds like a plan to me. Go right ahead, because that's on the topic.
All right, awesome.
Yes, go right ahead.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I will start by giving a brief update on two major topics on horse protection. I know that, you know, Marty Irby has been on here a couple times talking about
yes.
horse issues. He's a horse expert. And so I thought I'd give a couple of updates on the horse slaughter issue and also on the wild horse issue regarding the mass roundups and our concerns about the eventual slaughter of wild horses. You know, these are issues that have been in front of Congress for a number of years. It's brought some controversy because there are some special interest groups who would like to see horses slaughtered. But public opinion on this is very clear. The American public loves horses. We don't think they should be slaughtered. We don't want wild horses round up from their homes on the range. We want them protected. With wild horses in particular, there has been a longstanding problem with how these animals are being managed on the range. There, to give a little background and context on this issue, is that there's competition on the range between ranchers who want to use certain lands for grazing cattle, and then the horses who call those lands their homes. And then instead of utilizing responsible management practices, the Bureau of Land Management has historically relied on this inhumane and ineffective strategy of rounding up and removing the horses from the range, from their homes, and then they put the horses into what's government holding, essentially causing an increase in the number of horses that are under government care. And, you know, there's a much better option available that we have been advocating for here in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill. You know, it's a better option. It's available now. It's well-researched, and we know it works. And it's contraception vaccines, such as PZP fertility control. It provides a humane, long-term, cost-effective management solution. The only issue is that BLM needs to use it, but they've just refused to implement it. So now we've been in this situation where there are some who are calling for mass removals of horses from the range. And we're talking about a total of 130,000 horses. That's more horses than would actually exist on the range right now. So 130,000 horses over a period of 10 years. And that's leading to some serious questions about what's going to happen to all of those horses. There are already 50,000 horses sitting in government holding right now. Some lawmakers have tried to use the financial strain of that situation as a reason for why wild horses should be slaughtered. You know, they call for slaughtering them. And, you know, we believe that adding even more horses to government holding only makes the situation worse. We believe there's a very high risk it would lead to the eventual slaughter of these horses when the government is tired of paying to take care of them. And this is simply just not a wise course of action. But there are some special interest groups that are really pushing it. We spent a great deal of time last year fighting back to protect wild horses, and we're just continuing that fight into this year. And anyone listening who cares about our wild horses, you know, this is an active topic right now, and you should call or email your federal legislators, your U.S. representative, and your two U.S. senators, urging them to oppose mass roundups of wild horses. Somewhat related to this issue, on the horse slaughter issue, there is also the SAFE Act. It's a bill that would end horse slaughter. It's the Safeguard American Food Exports Act. It's a bill that we've supported for a long time. I've spent many years advocating on that bill. And it's essentially there are tens of thousands of horses, domestic and wild, that end up in the slaughter pipeline every year. The horses are exported to Canada and Mexico, where they are killed, and then the meat is sent overseas for human consumption. And this is all done simply to meet a demand for horse meat overseas. There are people that, you know, actually eat horse meat. The SAFE Act in the House is led by Representative Jan Schakowsky of Illinois. She's been a longtime champion of horse protection, and Vern Buchanan of Florida. And that bill number is H.R. 961. Again, all this information is on our website as well as far as specific bill numbers if you don't have time to write it down. But in the Senate, it's led by Senators Bob Menendez of New Jersey and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. And that bill number is S-2006. And I would encourage anyone to you know, contact your members of Congress, ask them to co-sponsor this bill, ask them to pass this bill. It has enormous support from the Congress. In the House, it has well over 220 co-sponsors. That's a lot of legislators supporting this bill. And it's a well-supported bill by the American public. The American public overwhelmingly opposes horse slaughter. And this is a bill that we just really, really need to get done. Kind of going into another issue to update listeners, there's another new bill. It's called the Bear Protection Act. It's also a hot topic in federal legislation right now. The Bear Protection Act is looking to protect bears from the bear bile trade. And it would do that by cracking down on the killing of bears for their gallbladders. So sadly, there are poachers who kill bears, even cubs, baby bears, because the gallbladders are so valuable. You know, a single gallbladder can exceed $1,000. The gallbladders are used in traditional Chinese medicine, and the trade is heavily centralized in China and South Korea, where bears are kept essentially crammed into these concrete pits or very small cages with tubes that are directly inserted into their gallbladder to obtain the bile until the bear's just lying there in the cage. They're not able to move, and they're just kept there until they eventually die from infection and agony. And then it's a serious problem. And now they're targeting American bears. Actually, starting in the late 1980s, hunters and park rangers in the U.S. started finding dead bears missing only gallbladders here in the U.S. And, you know, it's believed that what happened is that, you know, with the bear bile farm industry in Asia, they were essentially depleting the wild bear population in Asia. And so poachers started targeting bears in the U.S. because the U.S. had one of the last healthy bear populations on the planet. Poaching bears for their gallbladders, it's very much like, you know, the poaching of rhinos for their horns, elephants for their tusks. It's often linked to organized criminal enterprises. It puts bear populations at risk globally. In addition to the fact that it's extremely inhumane, it's a conservation issue. You know, bears reproduce very slowly, and, you know, females, you know, may not reproduce until the age of 5. They only have one or two cubs every other year, and so it is hard for them to replenish when they're being killed just for this unnecessary, greedy industry. So we worked to introduce the Bear Protection Act to help address this. And the Bear Protection Act would be a federal law. There are about 40 states that have state laws that address this issue, but that's only 40 of the 50 states. So, you know, and this is very much a federal type of issue. And so we're going to keep advocating for that bill as well. We're very happy to have bills introduced in both the House and the Senate on this issue, and I want to continue to urge everyone to call their members of Congress to ask them to co-sponsor this.
Yes, please do, everyone, and after you sign it or make that call, please spread the word to your families and your friends, your coworkers, your neighbors, because the more voices out there and action takers, the faster the positive changes will be made. And the suffering, you know, we got to look out for the lives and the futures of these animals and make sure they're treated fairly and their rights are granted, and not violated. Because, Holly, what you were saying, there was suffering. I mean, the pain and agony and the torture. It's totally uncalled for, you know. So we have to step in their big paws or their feet and be their voices and take action, everyone. That's the key. We can't just sit there and stay idle and not do nothing, because if we stay idle and do nothing, that means the problems worsen. And we don't want that. You know, we got to stand up for them, because animals and humans are all on this earth temporarily. We got to make the best of it, right, Holly? And give them the rights.
Absolutely.
Little, you know, fear-free and anxiety-free and the torture-free, abuse-free, neglect-free. You know, they're innocent. They're helpless, defenseless. You know, so we have to do something, every one of us, to get their lives better, because there's a lot of issues out there that need to be focused on and fixed right away, because animals are suffering as we are speaking on this radio platform. And it's going to continue on a lot of them until something is done and action is taken. So please, everyone, you know, spread that word. Get on social media. I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Twitter. You know, I put up 4 tabs and I'm sharing all over the place just to get the word out. You know, I don't use my social media for personal stuff. I use it for advocacy because it's more important to me, you know. And, you know, getting the word out there, pressing that share button. You know, I'm admin on several groups and pages on Facebook and LinkedIn and Pinterest, Twitter. You know, I'm out there and I'm fast. So it doesn't take that much time up. Once you get started and press that share button and that like button, Holly, it doesn't do no justice, right? It just doesn't. And Facebook, right. You can complain all you want to what's going on, but Facebook is not going to change any laws or get involved in changing any laws. So take those comments and put them in a letter form, please, and send them to your state representatives, because that's where you're going to see some changes and some good changes, because these animals so well deserve. You know, I stand up for them and speak out for all of them in need. On this show, 254 shows this evening, and I'm not going to stop. It's going to keep going because we've got a lot of issues out there, seen a lot of victories, but, you know, we're going to see more. It's Rock 2020 with legislation for the animals, rock the world with positive changes, because they can't thank us, but they can when they see their lives and futures changing for the better. That's when they thank us. And it's all worth it, right, Holly? I mean, we're putting our time and good efforts into it, and we're not going to stop. We're stepping up to the plate and saying, hey, enough is enough. We need change now, as soon as possible. So please, everyone, take that action and do it as much as, you know, every time you get a chance, because it's very meaningful time. And Holly, we've got a caller calling, and you want to take any calls right now? Area code 530. Okay, you're live and on the air. Is this my animal warrior sister, another one?
Hi, Debbie. It's me again. Hi.
Hi,
Holly.
You could call in as much as you want to. A former guest, everyone. She's out there. She's an animal warrior sister, too. And she's out there relentless trying to get these dogs off these chains. And nationwide, right, Jennifer?
Well, I know it's a large undertaking. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. And hello, Holly. We've just recently connected, and we're in a chat. So I know talking with Lori as well there in Florida. But yeah, I was really stoked when I realized that you're working with the federal angle, and so that's really really awesome. And it's interesting that you were talking about the Horse Protection Act, because I'm also a HSUS district leader volunteer in my area, and so we had just gotten an action alert to call our representatives. So that's what I'm going to be doing tonight. I'm going to be calling my congressman to hopefully that if he can be added to the very long list. Like you mentioned, it's so exciting to see 130 plus Congress members signing on to this and pushing this forward. So that's that's really exciting. Like you said, there's still a lot of more work to do, but you know, each call at a time, each email at a time, we're getting there, and also really happy to hear about a bill being introduced to help stop the bear bile issue, because oh my word, I've seen so many of the petitions with the, I believe it's usually the sun bears, right? Are they the sun bears that they usually have, and they're the ones they usually have in the cages? Is that correct?
Different types of bears, but yeah, they're kept in these very small cages. They can't move. This tube is inserted into their body, directly into the gallbladder, to obtain the bile that's within the gallbladder. There's no pain medication or anything, and the suffering is just unreal. In the U.S., fortunately, we don't have these bear farms, at least to our knowledge, and hopefully that, I hope and pray that never happens.
Right.
But they have, you know, gone out into the wild and just, like, and killed these bears, and they're not, the way that they kill these bears is not, it's not done in any way that could ever be considered humane. They tend to use very brutal, it's very, very brutal, and it's all just to get that gallbladder, and the rest is just completely wasted.
So are people hunting bears then within the U.S. to get the bile as well? Is that what you're saying as well?
Yeah, and I would call it poaching, not hunting. It's
right,
definitely poaching.
Right,
very,
if it's not legal.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and,
see, I didn't even realize that. I mean, I knew, obviously, I mean, there's plenty of poaching and hunting of bears in the U.S., but I didn't realize that they were hunting them down for the bile product as well.
Yep.
That's horrific. Wow. Well, so I'm very happy to hear that's being introduced. When did that happen? Was it the last couple of days?
This year for the Senate bill, and then last year the House bill was introduced. There's a bill in each chamber.
Nice. Right.
Yep.
Right. So very recent. Oh, that is good. Yeah. So I'm reach out to my congressperson. We'll see how it goes, because unfortunately quite often he hasn't taken a very positive stance on animal welfare, but you still want to reach out and at least try
yeah.
To do that. And yeah, because I, along with that, I kind of wanted to see what you might think as well about, because I've been thinking about it for quite some time and working the tethering issue, the canine tethering issue, but a lot of people have kind of discouraged the approach, but I really like to see what might be able to come about on a federal level, maybe an amendment, an update to our Animal Welfare Act. I know a lot of different amendments have taken place, especially with the recent PACT Act, which is really great, and I'm so glad that it passed. And a lot of people are out there saying, okay, well, when they see these cases of chained dogs, they're saying, well, now, you know, it's a federal offense now to be out and chaining your dog. But unfortunately, there's a fast facts that I have regarding the PACT Act drawn up by Holland and Murren Attorneys at Law. And it states on there that that chaining, neglect, and things of those things like bad conditions and tethering issues are not covered under the PACT Act.
That's
They're
right.
more specific to the crushing videos and things like that. But you know, that did pass federally. So I thought I might see what you thought, what you think about maybe something along the lines of working with, you know, the tethering issue and maybe considering that, even if not right away, at some point in time. if you have any ideas in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the dog training issue is one that is very close to my heart. It's an issue that I've been very passionate about ever since I was a very small child. You know, growing up in Florida, there were a lot of people just chained their dog out in the heat. And
yeah.
I just always felt, even at a very, very young age, there was just something about that that felt wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the dogs always just looked so sad. So even on just some basic level, I always just naturally felt that that was not an okay way to treat a dog. And then now
right.
we know that it's, you know, dogs are very social. They should be with the family, in the home, with the family. You know, it's detrimental to their psychological and physical health to be kept chained outside. It can
right.
also lead to an increase of dog bites in the
mm-hmm.
community because they start to get territorial about this very small spot that they're supposed to spend their entire life in. Yes, I've worked on this issue a bit on the, you know, the local level. It does tend to be a local and state level issue, certainly. I have personally put some thought into whether or not there could be a way to do something on this issue federally, and it's something I would definitely love to chat with you about, whether there could be an angle to do that. It's tough, though. It's tough to make
sure.
something like that a federal crime because it's typically something that's occurring in people's backyard. And typically,
right.
if you're going to have a federal law, there has to be some type of, you know, connection to, you know, interstate commerce or some federal nexus that would give federal jurisdiction to the issue. That being said, I'm glad that there have been so many localities adopting more and more legislation, thanks to people like you working on this issue. And there's still so much more that needs to be done. You know, especially I see a lot of what's happening in Texas and
yeah.
and just a lot of other states as well. So much more to still be done on that. Yeah.
And thank you so much for that input. And yeah, I would love to speak with you further because I've approached the animal welfare director with Alan Lowenthal, who's a congressman now, but around 10 plus years ago here in California, he was a representative senator. And speaking with him and getting our state law passed, a tethering law, it's a three-hour limit. It's one of the better in the country, but it's still a three-hour limit is very difficult to enforce. So unfortunately, we're still
yep.
seeing a lot of the dogs living on chains in California. And this is like the second year in a row that we've tried to get support from our Animal Welfare Association to back up. But they have basically approached us and said, unless the directors of animal control are saying there's a problem, you know, why would we support it? But I've also spoken with Congress members and kind of getting some advice from them because you mentioned that there's about 40 different states that have some type of protection for the bear bile issue.
Mm-hmm.
But as of yet, we only have like 21 states that even address the tethering of man's best friend
yeah.
in the country. It's just something's so wrong with that picture. And so talking with Congress, I believe it was Kamala Harris's legislative director, and just said, you know, what do you think? I mean, there's 21 states covering tethering. Is it even worth the push? Because a lot of people are saying that's kind of a pipe dream to think about that on a federal level. And I asked what their opinion was, and they're like, absolutely. And it's like, if you can, the closer you get to getting half of states to support something, the better chance that you're looking at something pushing on a federal level. So I mean, yeah, we're not at half states yet that address tethering on a statewide level. we are seeing more people working towards that, but there's still so many states that just struggle, particularly states like Alabama and like Georgia, that just people think it's absolutely impossible to push something on a state level. 2015-2016, Alabama pushed on a state level for something, and both times the bill died. And so, yeah, I would love to see something. I've been brainstorming, and what we do have out there, as I'm helping with the anti-dogfighting campaign, the anti-chain division, we do have a survey that is a national survey that we're constantly sharing. Whenever I share a case of a tethered dog, I attach the survey to it, encouraging people to fill it out on what their perspective is when they witness these dogs suffering on the chain and how it affects them emotionally, psychologically. So it's not just the dog's viewpoint, is that it's a degradation of a society as a whole to leave dogs, you know, skinny and suffering and dying. Children witness this. And I've talked to moms that have their you know, they go out and their child has found a dead dog on a chain because no help has been being given, and gross neglect. And the poor, you know, the kids are mortified, and they're traumatized to witness this. And with so many areas that have that, it's legal torture in people's backyards. And then, of course, you have the dog sledding industry and the Iditarod, who keep hundreds of dogs in that manner. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they're agriculture, and so they don't really have much protection at all, because there's usually a discrepancy that excludes sled dogs because they're product, an agricultural product. And so you have that issue as well. So it just really cries out. And so I know so many different people that, you know, when I, that in my network, you probably get so tired of hearing about it, but it's kind of an issue that it's the elephant in the room. And a lot of times people are reluctant to tackle it, because it is multifaceted and it is a complicated issue. My vision and dream is to see something, at least to elevate the standards, even if it's not a perfect amendment, just have something, some type of a raised and elevated standard for outside, you know, dogs that are left outside or, you know, may just stay outside 24/7, is to have some type of an improved standard for them. I would love to see. But anyway, I didn't mean to monopolize the podcast, but I just kind of wanted to see what you thought, being that you address things on a federal level. That's exciting. Okay. What an exciting job to have.
Absolutely. I feel very lucky to be able to do this. It's certainly my passion. It's what drives me every single day when I get up in the morning. I have two dogs of my own, and I love being able to look at them every single day and say, hey, I'm fighting for you and your kind. And everything goes back to what Debbie said earlier, which is that, you know, these animals are completely vulnerable. They don't have a voice of their own. We have to be their voice. Otherwise, they're just left to suffer in silence.
Right.
But I'm very interested in the chaining issue, and we will definitely touch base very soon.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, because I know we've had a brief conversation in our chat that we're hoping, because being that you're located in Florida, I elevate and applaud Florida, because they truly are way ahead of any other state in the country when it comes to tethering. There's 20 counties, almost 20 counties that have attended tethering that is quite effective, and it's the superior legislation ordinances to help protect dogs. So that's half of Florida.
Yes.
Half of the population of Florida has protection. So I feel if we can do that in Florida, why can't we do it in the rest of the country? I mean, it can be done in the rest of the state, because if we can get Florida in and have something on the state level, it's like with AB 485, the anti-puppy mill bill that passed in California a couple years ago. that I was very happy to endorse in committee. But, you know, once that happened, once they passed it, they use that as a template. And we have Maryland, I believe New Jersey, and in a lot of locales that are pushing the anti-puppy mills bill, so no puppy mill animals sold in pet stores. So it becomes a domino effect. So I think if we can get that to happen in Florida, we could really be cooking with gas and get somewhere in other states.
All right. And, well, and speaking of puppy mills, you know, I had promised to talk about the Pet Facts Act. So
yes,
should I go ahead and jump into that, Debbie?
Yeah, go right in. We could be on this airways all night long and come up with all kinds of issues, and we'll have to go until tomorrow.
Right.
You know, but hey,
right.
The more the better, you know.
Yeah, puppy
and thank
mills
you,
are
audience,
just...
for tuning in out there, because all this stuff is important, you know. I mean,
absolutely.
All animals matter, just like all lives matter with humans. You know, we
right.
want our rights granted, and so do the animals, you know. They're helpless, so we have to stand up for them and make it better for them. Yeah, go ahead with the puppy mills.
Oh, yeah, those puppy mills is also so terribly heartbreaking. So I'm so happy to hear progress there. So, yeah, please let us tell us about that, Holly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
So we have a new bill in the Congress. It was introduced as bipartisan. It was introduced by two very animal-friendly lawmakers in the House, Representative Charlie Crist. He's a Democrat from Florida. He has been a champion for animal protection since he has been in the U.S. Congress, especially on the puppy mill issue, and he's been fighting for better enforcement of current federal animal welfare laws, including the federal animal fighting law. He's been a true champion. It is also being led, the bill is also being led by Guy Reschenthaler, who is a Republican from Pennsylvania. He's been also fantastic on animal protection issues. He's been a champion on the puppy mill issue and a supporter of many animal protection bills. And, you know, you're probably thinking, what is a pet fact? It's called the Pet Facts Act. So what is a pet fact? Well, when we say pet facts, think of a Carfax report. So the idea here is that if you go and buy a car, you can get a Carfax report that gives you a full history of the car. But if you go to buy a puppy at a pet store, you generally won't get honest and truthful information about where the dog came from. You won't know whether its breeder has violations or its medical history. And, you know, that's where this bill comes in, by requiring disclosure of that type of information. It's about transparency.
Yeah.
And to put this into some context, and many people still do not realize that the dogs being sold in pet stores are actually from puppy mills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, puppy mills, I think most people listening probably know what a puppy mill is, but just to kind of refresh, you know, they're large commercial dog breeding operations. It's basically like a factory farm of dogs, large buildings with dozens of dogs in cages stacked on top of each other in horrific conditions. And then pet stores, of course, you know, they don't want consumers to know where the dogs come from. I mean, because when people find out, they're usually horrified. So they're not usually willingly honest and upfront about the fact that the dog came from a puppy mill. And there are over 100,000 mother dogs that suffer in puppy mills, where they are bred repeatedly. They're forced to spend their entire lives in these barren cages without ever touching a blade of grass. They suffer horrific, painful injuries without medical treatment. When the mothers are no longer able to produce, they're often killed. The puppies that come from the mills, they often become sick due to the poor breeding, the unsanitary conditions in the mills, and then the long-distance transport to the pet stores, because a lot of these puppy mills, you know, they're in Pennsylvania and they're in the Midwest, and then they have to endure that long-distance transport to get to pet stores where they're sold to unsuspecting consumers. And the current laws and regulations are so weak, they're essentially just survival standards at best. And so, you know, this is where the bill comes in. It requires the disclosure. It requires the sellers of dogs. And I should mention, it also covers cats. And I'll get into
great.
This a little bit. But, yeah, that's another thing that makes it new and exciting, I think, because there are two other bills that address puppy mills, and those are just about puppies, but this one also covers cats as well. There are some cat mills. It's not nearly as prevalent as with puppy mills, but they do exist, and
right.
You know, we felt that they needed to be considered here as well.
Absolutely.
But, so the bill, so like I said, it requires disclosure about the breeder who bred the animals, the number of animals that were bred and sold by that breeder over the past 2 years, what violations has the breeder had in the past 2 years, health information about the animals, including whether a veterinarian was seen or vaccinations administered, is there a risk of congenital disease? I feel like I'm seeing stories all the time or hearing from people about, you know, they went to a pet store and bought a puppy, and then a week or a few weeks later, the puppy became very ill and died, and come to find out, the puppy had a disease that they either got from the mill or the pet store, or a congenital disease. And then the bill also makes it illegal to misrepresent the source of a dog or cat, including misrepresenting whether the animal came from a high-volume breeder. Very unfortunate that even when a consumer does go into a pet store and tries to ask questions, oftentimes the pet store will try to say, no, that, you know, these puppies don't come from puppy mills. They're not from, we don't deal with puppy mills. And they try to make it seem like these animals came from some small breeder and they're just running around in the grass and happy, when that's certainly not the case. And we're very excited about this bill. It's brand new.
Awesome.
So we're working to build support for it, but we're very excited about it and excited to have two great champions on this issue.
That's amazing, and it's been so badly needed for such a long time, it's another no-brainer type of bill. I mean, especially, I mean, with the USDA, and I know there's like so few inspectors through the USDA going out. I remember because for a while I followed Harley's Dream and bailing out Benji, those different sites. And how I remember watching a video where I think it's Teresa, she founded Harley's Dream, where she was talking to some puppy millers and, you know, pushing for better legislation. And she was talking about there's, at that time, this is a few years back, I believe they stated there's only like maybe 8 or 9 inspectors for the whole U.S. I mean, I don't know if that's still correct, but it's like how, I mean, that's that's so out of proportion. I mean, how could, you know, 10 people possibly inspect all the puppy mills that are, you know, registered puppy mills across the United States? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So this, I'm really hoping that this bill will help, like you said, create more accountability and visibility, you know, for the public. Because there's so many unsuspecting consumers that, you know, that get these puppies that are sick, and have so many problems. So that's super exciting. And I'm glad to hear that the kitties are included as well. That's great.
They sure are. Yeah, we didn't want to forget about them either. And, another thing I like about this bill is that it does take a consumer protection angle in trying to help dogs and cats. And as a result, so the disclosure, the required disclosures as consumer protection provisions, it's actually enforced by the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, instead of the USDA.
Okay.
Another thing that's new and interesting about this bill, I really like this fresh angle, taking that consumer protection angle, because, like you said, the USDA enforcement has been horrific.
Right.
I mean, it. USDA enforcement of puppy mills, USDA enforcement of animal welfare laws, at all, have just been at an all-time low.
Right.
All-time low the past several years. It has never been super great, but it has been very, very low. And enforcement is actually an issue that is a huge priority for me and the animal wellness family. It's an issue that, you know, we are seeing the problems with enforcement of the Animal Welfare Act, you know, the puppy mills, and then also on the animal fighting issue. We're seeing even on the animal fighting issue that, you know, the federal enforcement is not quite where we would like it to be at. And, you know, we want to see more enforcement being done. We're seeing the animal fighting issue is rampant across the U.S., across the U.S. territories. We are seeing these animal fighting cases pop up every single day across the entire U.S. And, you know, we are making a very huge push on the USDA OIG and also the Department of Justice, DOJ, to try to enhance enforcement of the federal animal welfare laws and especially, you know, the animal fighting law as well. You know, animal fighting, it's not just immensely cruel for the animals that are the victims of this and forced to fight and drugged with these substances that, you know, hype them up and force them to fight. But the animal fighting issue is also closely associated with organized crime, gangs, gambling, drug trafficking, public corruption, violent crimes, just every
it's
social
all very...
ill that you can...
Oh, yes. Yeah, agreeing. Yeah, it's all so interconnected. And a lot of times, you know, legislators, especially on local levels, don't always really realize that. And that's actually an angle that we push a lot, is that, too, back to the tethering part of it, is that if you can get more laws passed against tethering, it's easier to spot. Maybe not always impossible, because there's going to be dog fighters that will find the loopholes and they might keep them in cages and such and in their basements, et cetera. But if chaining with heavy chains is so popular for conditioning and, you know, a way to keep mass amounts of fighting dogs in, you know, in one area, if you can eliminate chaining to the general public, it's easier to spot the criminals. And so the more laws that you can get passed that prohibits that practice, you will ultimately help to discourage and cut back on crime as a whole, you know, indirectly. So... you know, I think it's an excellent angle because, I mean, dog fighting is so rampant and in cockfighting and, So there's different ways. It's kind of like the game of Jenga. You know, you pull out the different stops here and there to try to get that tower of cruelty to topple.
Absolutely.
No excuse for animal abuse. That's the thing, you know.
No way.
There's no, you know, temper tantrums are no excuse. I mean, having a bad day or, you know, these animals deserve justice and peace. You know, let them live comfortably because they so well deserve it. They're not bothering anybody. I see so much, you know, like with the puppy mills, Holly, and stuff, pictures of them. Oh, my goodness. And how they're, some, a lot of them getting treated and how they're living and, it's sickening. They don't deserve that. The animals are animal living beings, and they should be treated like they're not property. You know, they're breathing just like we are and living. They just speak another language, and they deserve to be, you know, treated fairly. It's terrible. A lot of terrible cases out there.
And
you know?
Speaking of that, Debbie, them not being property, that's a big part of our problem is, so many of the laws only address animals as property, and that's why it's exciting. I'm sure, Holly, you probably follow pretty closely, too, with ALDF and their efforts in trying to change that wording because, I mean, New Zealand, was it a couple years ago? Maybe it was 2015. They got added to their Animal Welfare Act that animals are sentient beings. And so it's just like, oh, man, I hope that maybe with ALDF's efforts, and if too bad we couldn't all just kind of, you know, for the legal angle, work on that to try to get a standard like that here in the U.S. as well. So it's like, if New Zealand can do it, come on, we can do it too.
Exactly. Yes.
But they're not property. They're living, breathing, feeling beings.
That's right.
Hey,
and they should be
treated
with respect. Whoa.
Hey,
property. That's
so
like your, your house and your cars and your, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
Whoa.
Oh, go ahead, Holly.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I was going to say on the puppy mill issue, you know, we have another person at Animal Wellness who works with me very closely, and she manages a lot of our work on the puppy mill issue. Her name is Michelle Patterson, and I believe she called in. Do you think we'd be able to? She actually lives in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And I know we only have a couple of minutes, but do you think you could patch her in just to get let her give a quick perspective?
Yes, if she could give me a one, a press one in the queue, and I'll let you in because the queue is packed. So whoever, please press one. There we go. That way I know who's calling in. Area code 610. You're live and on the air. Welcome to Animal Advocates Radio. Go ahead. Any comments or questions for Holly or Jennifer? Go ahead.
I just wanted to say hi, Debbie. Thank you for having Holly from Animal Wellness Action on. I am the Puppy Mill Committee Chair for Animal Wellness Action, and I just wanted to share why the Pet Facts is so important to help get the word out and explain to people why. In the last couple of weeks, there have been three cases of people who purchased puppies, obviously fell in love, and their puppies died because they had congenital or hereditary issues. And the people are still responsible for the veterinary bills, as well as some of these people have financed the puppies, so they're still responsible for paying their bills, even though they no longer have a puppy. If the Pet Facts Act passes, then that information, if the breeder did not disclose that these puppies had congenital or hereditary issues, then that would be cause for action from the Federal Trade Commission. And the other part of the bill that we're really excited about is it also includes part of what the Wolf Act would cover, which is covering some loopholes that some of these commercial breeders seem to get around when they have violations or they lose their license. They'll often have a family member or someone living on the same property apply for the license, and the USDA would issue the license. So this would close a loophole where a person who has violations previously cannot apply for a license, nor can their spouse or anyone who would be directly related to caring for the dogs.
Wow.
Yeah, so it is important. And ladies, we're down like a minute and 30 or 45 seconds here. Holly, I want to really thank you for coming on this evening live on air, and love to have you back, get you scheduled in. Because we got so many issues that we can, you know, go over. Jennifer, thank you for calling in and being a part of this. She's a former guest. I'd love to get with you and bring you on again. I'll be sending you an email or a text message or something. And the caller, I'm sorry, your name, thank you for calling in and standing up, you know, against the puppy mills. Because this is important, everyone. Everything is important out there. So thank you all.
Thank you, ladies.
Listeners calling in, or, you know, listeners out there, thank you for tuning in, making this show a total success. The former guests, the audience, the callers making it happen, Marty Oakley, and a big shout out to all the supporters here. We're running out of time. List I got. But keep, you know, standing up for the animals, because paw in hand, united, we stand against all animal cruelty and neglect across the land. Next Thursday will be Shauna Shurek. She's the founder and president of Wildwood Farm Sanctuary. So next week will be farm animals. So I hope you all tune in at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock Mountain, and 4 o'clock Pacific. Listen in worldwide, unlimited callers. Please, everyone, you know, call your state representatives, 202-224-3121. Give your zip code, and they'll lead you from there. Be the animals' voices and be a strong one. Thank you, Holly, and so much, and Jennifer, and the caller called in. This is an awesome show again, and a big shout-out to Animal Wellness Action, all of your staff out there. Thanks for all you're doing for the animals.
Thank you, ladies, for all you do. You guys are awesome.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
really
Holly.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having us.
Hey, anytime.
All right, thank you.
Have you back, okay? And everybody have a good evening, and may God bless. Good night.
You too. Good night. Thanks. Good night.